Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of Snake Oilers, the wholly sponsored podcast we do here at Risky.biz, where we get a bunch of vendors together to pitch you on their sweet, sweet snake oil. My name, of course, is Patrick Gray. And really the idea is, you know, we get these vendors in here and they have to answer one question. I'll let Bob ask it.
What would you say you do here?
So, we've got three vendors in this edition of Oilers. First up, we're going to hear from Sidearm. They make an incident handling platform for the SOC. Then we'll hear from Detexion. They're a small startup with a product that audits all of your cloud services like O365, Dropbox, Salesforce, or whatever. They audit your accounts to look for things like over-provisioning, basically. And this is a really, really useful thing for SMEs with compliance requirements. And then we're going to hear from Trend Micro, and they're really dropping by to talk more about XDR. And, you know, this is really a pitch that you'll hear from other vendors, not just them. The idea is to, you know, they're really trying to go beyond EDR and just endpoint logs and alerting. And, you know, they're going to try to stitch together that endpoint information with other types of logs, like things that come from the network. So that's Trend Micro coming by to pitch XDR as a concept. But let's hear from Sidearm now. First up, Vaughn Shanks is the chief executive and co-founder of Sidearm, and that's spelled C-Y-D-A-R-M. Very clever, guys. They make incident response management software, I guess you'd call it case management software. The idea is, instead of using Jira and Slack to manage SOC stuff, you can actually use something purpose-built. So I asked Vaughn the Bob question, what would you say you do? And here's what he said.
Sidearm is a case management platform. It's a web app. It's typically deployed into a security operations center, and it just helps you keep track of all of the activities that people are working on.
So this is like case management software, essentially specifically for a SOC. Is that right?
Exactly. It's case management for security operations.
Okay, and what sort of things do you use this software to do? Like, is this about doing, you know, real deep dives on incidents? Because a lot of the time when we think of like incident response software, we think of forensics or whatever. This isn't really that, is it?
No, this is aimed at enabling people to collaborate better. And a key part of that, we notice that often the way people do security operations, they're using generic ticketing systems. And that they're a pain to use. They require extensive customization to do anything close to what would be regarded as best practice. And, you know, the data entry is often a complete pain. So we've aimed to make an experience that's really easy to use and is already set up to do cybersecurity operations.
Okay, so this is really designed to replace like Jira in the SOC.
Yes, we do often see generic ITSM platforms. And yeah, this is a big step up from that.
Okay, in what sense, right? So if I upgrade from a generic ticketing platform and I get myself Sidearm, what is it getting me that those platforms can't give me?
So for a start, we have a built-in workflow that is based off the Computer Security Incident Handling Guide from NIST. In fact, we steal all of our best moves from the Computer Security Incident Handling Guide. It's the best advice we could find. We're not here to tell people how to do their job. We just basically use best practice as our benchmark.
Yep. So you steal all NIST's workflows and create some workflows around that work in your software.
I haven't spoken to anyone at NIST about this, but I think, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And I think they would probably be glad to know that someone out there is heeding their advice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they put out this advice so that people like you will do things like this. can you give us an example of like, you know, a typical sort of incident that's commonly handled through this platform and what the collaboration component looks like, right? Because I'm thinking, you know, what sort of collaboration do you really need outside the SOC? Why do you need a, you know, an actual platform to handle that?
So what we've seen is that many of our customers not only have an internal, they often have a small internal SOC team. But then they might have a managed service provider that gives them out-of-hours support. And depending on the nature of an incident, if something escalates and there's people involved and there's conjecture about insider threats or other sensitive data coming in or out of the system, you don't necessarily want all of that data to be available to everyone who is collaborating. But you still need to have a tight loop. You need to be able to collaborate without too much hassle. So we've used a access control to enable collaboration.
Okay, so this allows for the discussion of sensitive incidents. Because, you know, quite often, you know, in the case of a major incident, people will spin up their own Slack. You know, that's sort of the way that, you know, it's a Slack specific to that incident. But this is more for the workaday incidents, isn't it?
It's for incidents of all shapes and sizes. And can I say first, be very careful using Slack for incident response. It does store local copies of your information on every device that is logged into that channel. So that is a good way to make sure your sensitive incident response data is scattered around many, many devices.
It's a good way to make sure your sensitive data is in as many places as humanly possible.
Exactly. And certainly there's been some instances of where Slack is a useful vector for an attacker. If you want to move laterally, maybe, you know, having a rummage through someone's Slack files is probably a good way to start getting some ideas about, you know, passwords or other things you could connect to.
So
I think Slack for incident response is, you know, it's a default option people use because it's easy and it's got a nice user experience. So the question we ask is, what if you could take all the rigor of a case management platform, which sounds very serious, but make it as easy to use as something like Slack?
Do you actually have a chat function in the platform?
Not really a chat function. It looks a little more like using, say, a conversation in Twitter or LinkedIn. It's more like a thread in that sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, right? So it's more like, yeah, DMs, but everything would be catalogued and logged, and it's sort of like sounds a little bit more serious than Slack, but a little less serious than, help me out.
Archer.
Than what, sorry?
Archer. RSA Archer. I don't want to throw too many vendors under the bus, but there's some shockers out there, just stuff. It's like, why are you recording notes in Notepad? Oh, well, the case management system is kind of awful. You know, I only use it once a day if I'm forced to.
Like, yeah. So of the clients that you do have, what are the types of incidents that they're, you know, most commonly kind of collaborating on in the platform that you build?
To be perfectly honest, what we see is a high volume of phishing emails.
Yeah.
And this is just true everywhere. That's just the most common attack vector. Sometimes you can look at it and do a quick once over and say, you know, this was just a report. There's nothing to do here. Shut it down. Maybe tag it first. We support tagging so you can start to quantify these things. But then sometimes it'll be, okay, someone clicked on a link and something funny's happened here and it could escalate. And you know, you could be, you know, further down the kill chain. And so that's when you might want to delegate out some of the investigation response activities. And for that, we have playbooks. So you can actually slap a playbook onto a case and then start delegating tasks out to members of your team.
Yeah, that makes a great deal of sense. Now, one of the things that you just mentioned there was, you know, being able to tag things. And, you know, it's part of your pitch that you can actually start observing some metrics if you're using this system properly. And, you know, you've said that, that you know, every time there is an incident, it's evidence that a security control has failed. So you say that you can take the data from this system and actually use that to start guiding change, right? To start guiding new initiatives and whatnot. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So one of the core tenets of the platform is evidence-based security. And so this is the idea that instead of making security decisions, like what do we want to invest in new controls? How do we want to arrange our processes and people, you know, resourcing levels? Instead of basing that on gut feel, instead you actually use metrics to underline the reasons why you need things to be done a certain way.
So if a certain type of incident keeps popping up and there is an additional control you can put in place to get, you know, to stamp that out, that might be, you know, it's going to help you build the case, isn't it?
Yeah, if you have, for example, if you're getting a lot of phishing emails and you might think these are high volume, easy to spot phishing emails, we should really have a control in place. We don't want to be wasting our time investigating all this. Yeah. Then you would be able to see that in the data, in the metrics.
Yeah, you'd be able to make a strong case to say the people who are filtering our email are not doing a very good job.
Exactly. Yeah, we either need to change the configuration of our email filter or we need to deploy something better or different.
Yeah, or find a new provider, right? Because so much of that is in the cloud now.
Yeah.
Now, look, you know, you briefly mentioned the access control component of this earlier, and it surprised me to learn, you know, you've told me that, like, this is where a lot of case management stuff actually falls down, is they don't do good access control, which is kind of surprising, but yet gives you this wonderful opportunity to turn it into a selling point. Tell us what you've done around access control and why.
So what we've done is I've taken my experience from working in national security in a variety of places. And what I've seen there is that collaboration works really well across people from different nationalities, different levels of clearance and code words. And so if we bring that same level of rigor into security operations, that rigor and flexibility around access control, you can have people from outside your organization collaborating with you, knowing that you're not going to spill data accidentally. You can generate reports from the platform and effectively automatically redact the things that you don't want to share. And so the system is flexible enough, you can configure it to support multi-tenancy. So if you're running an MSSP, you can have all of your clients visible to you, but all of them mutually unaware of each other. If you're running a government agency and you've got a SOC, you know, you might want to limit what information is sent into reports that get sent externally. So it's kind of like traffic light protocol, but a way more flexible and powerful system.
Now, you've told me that you know, there's a high level of interoperability with this system, with this platform. What do you need to be interoperable with when you're running a case management platform?
Sidearm can start cases based on a number of different inputs. So, for example, you can have a SIEM platform or a cloud system like GuardDuty firing alerts that then get picked up and put into Sidearm cases, or even just common standard email. And then on the outbound, people need to have notifications when significant events occur. So we integrate a lot of external platforms to enable that sort of orchestration.
Yeah. Now, you just mentioned orchestration, and there's more to that piece as well, I believe.
Yeah. So Sidearm has a system of triggers where basically certain events on the platform, and it's configurable, can fire off a trigger. So based on what comes through the API, and you can have an action that follows that trigger. So for example, if you wanted to automatically enrich some structured data, such as an IOC, we have a trigger for that can basically send that IOC out and query a number of platforms and pull back results and list them all in the case notes, just to save you doing that cut and paste.
Vaughn Shanks, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to give us your pitch for the Sidearm software or system or platform, I guess is what we call these things these days. I wish you all the best with it. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Great to be on the show.
That was Vaughn Shanks there from Sidearm, spelled CYDARM, and you can check them out at cydarm.com. All right, next cab off the rank is Detexion. Detexion offers a service that does something very useful for small to medium enterprises. It can audit your SaaS account permissions and check for stuff like ghost users and over-provisioning, and they can spit out pretty compliance reports that will show you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Adrian Kitto is a co-founder of Detexion and acts as its CTO. And again, I asked him, what would you say you actually do? And here's what he said.
So what we do is we connect into all your SaaS tools that are holding your business critical and your customer sensitive data, pull the information out, we normalize it to a single set of language and lexicon, and then we triage it for misconfigurations and blind spots, things that you don't know about. For example, like excess permissions or excessive file shares.
Okay, so this is really about going out and doing what, an auto audit of the permissions for services like, I'm guessing, things like Dropbox, Salesforce, things like that?
That is correct. We support both Dropbox, Box, Office 365, Atlassian, but the list goes on.
Yeah. Okay. So what sort of issues can customers typically expect to turn up when they do this exercise with you?
The most common one that we hit straight out of the gate is people seeing excessive privileges. So too many privileged users, too many highly privileged users, because when organizations of this size have leavers, comers, and goers, they actually often don't have automated user offboarding procedures. So far, every single one of our clients that has ever onboarded has seen at least one, if not more, users that have got too much privilege or have left their organization.
Right. So these people who, Bob left 6 months ago but still has a Salesforce account. Not ideal.
Absolutely not, especially because Salesforce allows login from anywhere. So as long as Bob can remember his username and password, he can keep logging in forever.
Now, as we mentioned at the intro there, you know, you've got a specialty for organizations in the 100 to 1,000 seat range, which is, you know, puts you squarely in that sort of SME end of the market. Why is that?
So the SME markets are ill-equipped basically to look after the changing regulations that are coming. So pretty much every major region around the world has had regulatory changes that have required cybersecurity and cyber uplift actions. Because they have no security ecosystem, these organizations, and they are all SaaS powered, these organizations are not set up to look after that. So we decided to target this and then basically build a product and a solution that would actually fix their issues.
Now, you mentioned regulations there. Are there specific regulations that apply to, you know, are there regulations that apply to this specific problem of over-provisioning in SaaS? Because I'd imagine a lot of the regulations would just be about user accounts and provisioning in general, but now that's moved into a lot of SaaS services. You know, I imagine the regulation would have just moved with it, right?
Yes, there is specific regulations. So, for example, if you were to look into New York's financial services, they have a regulation which is called 23NYCRR Part 500, which is a cybersecurity regulation for people who are supplying services to financial entities in the New York industry. And they require things like MFA, they think require audit trail of changes to these accounts, and privilege access management as well. So that is required both for the regulated entities and also their suppliers.
So obviously you're not delivering MFA, you're just delivering basically an audit and change tracking component. Is that the boxes that you're ticking there?
Yes, that is correct. So we provide audit and compliance oversight for multi-factor authentication, privilege access, and then provide them an audit trail of changes over time, centralized into a single platform as well for all their SaaS platforms.
So when people sign up for this, I mean, are they using this in a continuous way, or is it usually like they're using it more as a semi-regular point in time exercise? How are people actually engaging with Detexion?
So we see both. So we tend to have an operator type person who is looking at it as a continuous way. They're wanting to get a traffic light overview of their SaaS posture on it almost daily basis, and they get notified when things change. As well as that, we also have a point in time. So we generate a simple report that provides evidence in order for people to be able to win more business via vendor due diligence or to provide to an external auditor. So we have both use cases.
So, you know, I know a lot of MSSPs actually listen to these Snake Oilers editions, right? Because they're always looking for new stuff that they can roll out to their customers. Is that something that's in your future, do you think, is doing some partnerships with MSSPs that can roll this out to their clients? Or are they typically just targeting, you know, large enterprise and there's not really much overlap with where you want to go sort of thing?
So all the MSSPs we've talked to so far have been targeting the larger enterprises and things like that. We would absolutely love to build a relationship with an MSSP that was working in that mid-market sector. So our current partners to market are actually assurance firms who are looking to provide both recurring revenue and for themselves, and also provide evidence of changes between point-in-time audits.
It really makes sense what you said earlier. Like, I really get it now when you say it's smaller companies, but ones in heavily regulated, heavily regulated industries. Because I'm thinking there's so many of those boutique-y sort of consulting firms that might work across healthcare, you know, finance, all of those sort of regulated industries. That's a lot of people.
That's absolutely true. And the particular thing for those organizations is they don't really understand cybersecurity at a fundamental level. So convincing them that they are going to get a report and things like that. So if you've ever logged into the standard cyber tool, the dashboard's full of like pie graphs and like trends and like NIST type frameworks and things like that. These are words that don't mean anything to anyone that is outside of the industry. So when we built our product, it was actually designed and built around simplicity and breaking it down to the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then providing that evidence so that it can go from our hands to that boutique consultancies, and then directly up to the board and to the executive management of that medium-sized organization who has no dedicated security training and probably may not even have a dedicated security resource.
I'd imagine that a big part of the sales cycle here is, I mean, is it convincing people that this is something that they actually have to do to comply, or is it like a case that compliance managers are seeking this out because they know that they need to do it?
So it depends on which of our two buckets we're in. So if they're in that mid-size market organization, they understand that they need to do better cyber security uplift and things like that. Where in the smaller ones, they're really driven by compliance as a requirement. So their customers, who often are in regulated entities and things like that, banks and health and things like that, are doing really regular due diligence requests on them. So their main motivator and things like that is in order to win bigger and more frequent business. And that's why they come to us to get that assurance.
And I understand right now you're actually redoing a lot of your pricing. And in part, that's because you're trying to build out a sort of channel partner go to market. That's right, isn't it?
That is correct. And what we're doing is we're building out a pricing module that is scalable for an organization, so we can give them the real baseline stuff that they need at a lower value and things like that. And then as their compliance and their reporting uplift goes on, they can scale up to buy more expensive modules and things like that that will meet those requirements.
Now, look, for anyone listening to this who wants to check it out, I believe you're actually doing a free 28-day trial, which will allow people to generate a compliance report, you know, for free. Is that right?
That is completely correct. We allow unlimited SaaS and all features during our trials, which are 28 days. And during, as part of that trial, we include a free executive report for your management and board of directors.
And we can mention, too, that, you know, quite often these reports that you generate, they can just be handed over as part of a due diligence request, right? Like that's one thing that some of your customers are enjoying rather a lot.
Yeah, so it's very much true for those smaller, medium enterprises that are working as suppliers inside the regulated industries. They're getting hammered by due diligence requests. In the Australian market, CPS 234 came into effect this year, and which requires the regulated entity to see evidence of systematic testing of controls. By getting one of our reports, which shows time changes over time, that SME is able to provide that systematic evidence of that report, so then they can land bigger and more frequent deals with their target customers.
So there you go, people. If you need to do an audit of SaaS users, which, you know, like a lot of people, that is actually a blind spot. So if that is something you need to do for compliance purposes, or if you are a consultancy or an MSSP that has, you know, smaller clients in regulated industries, the company name is Detexion. Adrian Kiddo, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That was Adrian Kiddo of Detexion there. You can find them at detexion.com, and that is detexian.com. And don't forget, too, you can head to the show notes for this podcast, and you will find links to everyone who appears in it. Our last snake oiler of the day is Trend Micro. Trend is a player in the EDR market, among others. And there's a bit of a move on right now in that whole sector. EDR is dead, man. Totally dead. EDR is yesterday's news. XDR is the new hotness, and the X stands for extended. And I guess the reason they're calling it XDR is because if you wanted to give it a straight acronym, it would still be EDR, which would be confusing. But here is a description of XDR from one of Trend's competitors, actually. Here it is. XDR collects and correlates data across email, endpoints, servers, cloud workloads, and networks, ensuring visibility and context into advanced threats. Threats can then be analyzed, prioritized, hunted, and remediated to prevent data loss and security breaches. So basically, you know, this is SIEM-like functionality, but via a single platform. Trend Micro's Eric Skinner joined me to talk about XDR, and here's what he had to say.
So really, people got excited about EDR for lots of good reasons. And it was about letting the security team not only get alerts, but get all kinds of activity behavior that might be suspicious, that might be completely benign, that might be bad stuff happening. And then they were able to process that information later, hunt through it manually or do automated detection, but it was focused on just endpoints. So EDR is expanding now. This concept of XDR that's starting to take root in the industry is, well, let's extend the concept of EDR and let's extend that detection and response to other places in the environment where you're not just gathering logs, but you're gathering activity. And yeah, what's the line between logs and activity telemetry and alerts? Well, alerts are going to be very, very narrow range of data, but you know, alerts aren't giving you enough to go on when you're trying to piece together, you know, an interesting attack that relies on lots of potentially suspicious data. You want the activity telemetry.
It's so funny, XDR, right? Because we were actually having that conversation before we got recording. We've been chatting for about half an hour before we hit the record button. And, you know, one of the things we were talking about is like, yeah, logging versus behavioral detection. Like, how much of the smarts do you want on the endpoint versus on the receiving end? You know, when is it just logging? When is it? Yeah, it's a bit of a philosophical discussion. But most of the EDR vendors, they're doing quite a lot on the host, aren't they?
They are. So, you know, there's been a lot of convergence between endpoint protection and endpoint detection and response. All the EDR vendors were adding, enriching their products in EPP-related ways and the other way around. And, you know, while there's certainly some of the older technologies that used to get used, things like signatures and so on, that are not going to give you as much value today, there are technologies that the EPP vendors, people like Trend, got very good at, which were these extremely high-speed behavioral detections where you're trying to basically kill something with fire if you're pretty sure that it's bad. And that's where you get an interesting intersection with the EDR products. So you get this super, super hair trigger behavioral detection, which at the end of the day is about observing activity and then making a decision that something needs to be killed. And EDR, which is typically observing it for a slightly longer period of time and catching other types of activity that, you know, a behavioral detection in the EPP would not have caught. So these two things are still valuable and evolving rapidly, of course.
Well, and then I guess, you know, the thing that makes this kind of a new concept or an extension of an existing concept is that you can start correlating, you know, events on hosts with wider activity happening around the hosts,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So one of the things that people get excited about with with XDR is that they're going to start to be able to see network telemetry in a way that is integrated with the endpoint telemetry. And it's kind of a gray area, right? Because some EDR products will give you not a lot of visibility from a network perspective. They'll just do like DNS lookups and they'll show you that in the telemetry. Other EDR products, like our EDR product, will show you, oh, every IP connection that was inbound or outbound. It will tell you things that were blocked at the kernel level, connections to known bad IPs, things like that. So that's interesting, but it's still not nearly enough network visibility to see some of the interesting stuff that goes on. So if you say, okay, now I've not only got EDR data sources, but I've got network data sources that are going to tell me about traffic that's moving between hosts that maybe I don't have up-to-date EDR protection on, which happens because maybe there's a contractor device or something that didn't get configured correctly or something that the attackers have already disabled the security on because they've dumped credentials somewhere else. The network visibility is going to allow you to see strange activity, and you're going to potentially be able to tie that back to some process level telemetry that you're getting from an EDR on another host. So that's super useful.
I mean, this pitch is familiar, right? Because it's sort of like along the lines of what's Microsoft's one, Sentinel, and then you've got Backstory from Google. I mean, that's where we're all going, isn't it? Which is to try to unify all this stuff. Yeah,
there's a number of people who are coming at this in different ways, and I think when you think about the market segmentation here, there are platform vendors, so people like Trend and Palo Alto and others. Here I am crediting my competitors, but hey, why not? So there are people like Trend who are saying, okay, we've got enough interesting data sources on our own to have some critical mass there. So we can take our EDR telemetry and our email security telemetry and network security and some specialized server telemetry that we have. And what am I forgetting? Office 365 and SaaS applications, things like this. And then we can supplement it with things like Azure AD and whatever else. And then there are vendors, you know, maybe some of the next gen SIM vendors, Chronicle, who are saying, okay, well, we don't have our own data sources, but we can consume third party data sources. And neither answer is incorrect. And certainly there's going to be some convergence there. But certainly what we found is we have control over our data sources. So we can get exactly what we need from the various parts.
But that's the whole philosophical argument, isn't it? Do you go for a platform vendor like Trend, right? And I know a key part of your pitch is like the old Symantec pitch of like, you know, unifying a lot of your supply agreements and whatnot, and making procurement easier and et cetera, especially now Symantec have sort of departed for outer space and, you know, basically refused to renew a lot of contracts, right? So I understand that's part of the pitch. But then there's the other side of the coin, which is, you know, some of these more open, you know, next gen seams, as you referred to them, and just saying, well, we'll take it from everywhere. I mean, the plan is always to stitch that data as well, but I mean, it does generally work better when it's, you know, it does generally work better when it's one platform, but it's, I don't know, maybe less comprehensive, if that makes sense.
We're going to have to see how this plays out. Certainly there's a lot of interesting stuff happening, but the reality is we understand our telemetry really well. And when our telemetry isn't good enough, we make it better, right? Whereas if you're somebody who's trying to do this with random third parties, you get what you get through the APIs, which may not be full activity telemetry or may not be what you need for whatever reason. So, and then again, those vendors will be able to go and get arbitrary telemetry from places that we might not. So I think you're going to see a convergence of these approaches. The reality is we can take all that basically that tidal wave of telemetry that we're getting, and we're then applying a set of specialized filters to that enrich the telemetry. So we keep all of the telemetry in a data lake, because who knows what you're going to need, but we're also enriching it to enable automated correlation and enable hunting that's less painful. So we're leveraging, you know, some expert rules there. We're leveraging some data stacking, a little tiny bit of AI, and helping shine a light on things that are a little bit more interesting than just the raw telemetry, but maybe not qualifying as alerts.
It's funny too, because like people might have forgotten that, you know, what was a Tipping Point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys still have an IPS product.
Tipping Point.
Yeah, that was like a long time ago.
Very well.
What's interesting too, I think the network stuff's going to be really interesting next year. And sorry, I'm dragging you away from your preferred topic, but you know, the emergence of TLS 1.3 with ESNI and domain over HTTPS. I mean, network is going to go dark in the next couple of years in a way that I don't think people fully appreciate, right? Like, because we did this big show on it a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago now, just talking about, you know, TLS 1.3 and ESNI. And you know, it didn't really, sometimes you do a story and, you know, it kicks up a bunch of conversation, but no one's really talking about it. I don't think they realize how bad it's going to be for them. Do you have any feelings on this?
We certainly do. We've thought a great deal about that, and certainly we do see the shifts. And first of all, what you'll see is people who are trying to add value to network security are going to be looking at various new ways they can do things, even if they can't see the traffic. And then
it's all going to be sort of timing-based traffic analysis. That's all you're going to have left, really.
It's not all you'll have left, and maybe we'll have to do another snake oilers on some of the detail there. But I would never be arguing for relying exclusively on the network telemetry. What we see, you know, if I may pivot back to the XDR topic, is that the network story will enrich what we also see from the endpoint or other places in the environment. For example, we can see traffic volume and we can see traffic destinations even if we can't see inside the traffic, and we can
you will not be able to see destinations under ESNI and TLS 1.3.
Fair enough.
It went to a CDN.
Yeah, I'm talking about now, but yes, you're right. As things evolve, there will be shrinkage in some of the aspects of the telemetry that we can see, depending on what we control on either the source or the destination host.
I mean, it's going to be great for companies. It's going to be great for companies that are on the endpoint, right? Because network's going to be just a shit show.
Well, then this is because. Well, and then look at everybody working from home now in lots of places and for potentially long stretches of time, and so the telemetry that people are getting from their network is different now. It's you know, there's less endpoints in there. You know, what you do see may be more interesting because there's less of it. But yeah, the endpoint is terrifically important. But hey, email has been just this treasure trove, right? When you connect to Office 365 and you're getting an event stream from Office 365, you're able to assist and boost that understanding what's going on an endpoint in all kinds of ways, not just, oh, who else got this email that triggered this strange behavior and therefore, you know, accelerating your response to other endpoints.
Well, funnily enough, that's kind of why I brought up the network thing, is because while you're losing that, you know, these cloud services now are actually starting to provide some decent telemetry, and correlating that, especially for O365 shops, you know, correlating that information with stuff happening on the endpoint, that is going to give you some, the reddest of red flags, right? When something is amiss. Right.
And when you see something weird, like, you know, we have lots of ability to rapidly detect and kill ransomware on an endpoint. And that doesn't even necessarily get the attention of somebody in the SOC because it's like, okay, it's dealt with. I've got to worry about other things. But when we can say, all right, we had a ransomware detection on this endpoint, it's dead. But by the way, it came from PowerShell, from an email, from, you know, a document inside an email. And that email also got delivered to five other people in the organization because we've walked the chain through telemetry from Office 365. Now you have something actionable in the SOC, and they didn't have to pick up the phone and ask the Office 365 admin for that. So that's showing immediate value. All kinds of interesting things happen in Office 365, right? Attackers can have sufficient credentials that they're then gaining persistence by changing templates in the default configs in Office 365. Well, that activity, we can see that activity, and we can then connect the dots to strange activities on the endpoints. So there's all kinds of stuff that we get exposed through our visibility to Office 365, or maybe it's AWS or other places in the environment. So we think this is a good approach. It's a natural extension of the EDR approach. And right now it comes down to, you know, how much time can you save for that team that is trying to detect and respond to threats.
All right, Eric Skinner, thank you so much for joining us on Snake Oilers to walk through, you know, your pitch for, I guess, an industry-wide trend towards these broader XDR concepts. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
That was Eric Skinner there from Trend Micro. Big thanks to him for that. And you know where to find Trend. They are not a small startup. And that is it for this edition of Snake Oilers. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back in a couple of days with more security news and analysis. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.